More Money, Less Work, Aki Zoom by Pier Vittorio Aureli. In 1969, Manfredo Tafuri published his seminal essay Toward a Critique of Architectural Ideology in the Marxist journal Contrapiano, which would act as the embryo of his influential 1973 pamphlet Architecture and Utopia. In the essay, Tafuri outlined a critical genealogy of modern architecture, emphasizing its problematic role within capitalist development. According to Tafuri, the role of modern architecture, especially in its avant-garde moments, was to articulate ideological prefigurations of the future effects of capitalist development. In doing so, modernist architecture culture had a precise role in naturalizing these effects and making them socially and culturally acceptable. The more architecture culture raised the bar of radical experimentation, the more it anticipated the following cycle of capitalist development. And yet, once a cycle of experimentation was surpassed by a newer cycle of development, architectural and urban products would be left behind as form without utopia, meaning a form devoid of any reformist urgency. Toward a Critique of Architectural Ideology had a huge impact on the Italian debate about architecture and the city, as it was the first important attempt to link a Marxist perspective with a critical analysis of modern architecture. For those architects and critics that were distant from Tafuri's approach, the essay was understood as the enunciation of the quote, death of architecture. But this was not true for a generation of young architects who saw in Tafuri's critique the starting point for a radical revision, not so much of architecture itself, but of the role of the architect as a cultural producer. More than any other architects, it was Archi Zoom, a design collective based in Florence and active between 1966 and 74, that attempted to translate the essay's main thesis into their architectural practice. In opposition to previous accounts of Italian architecture, in which the work of Tafuri and Archi Zoom has been placed in two different folders, Tafuri within the critical approach of the Venice School and Archi Zoom and Superstudio within the movement of quote radical architecture, their extremely different positions share not only a common critique of capitalism as it was embodied by the city and its architecture, but also a critique of the reformist and utopian aspirations of progressive culture, identified both within late modern architecture and within the neo-avant-gardes of the 1960s. In spite of Tafuri's famous dismissal of Archi Zoom's work, the Florentine collective was clearly influenced by Tafuri's theses on the evolution of the modern city. As Archi Zoom member Andrea Branzi has acknowledged, the group's No Stop City of 1969 to 71, a seminal project for total urbanization of the world, was conceived as an attempt to translate Tafuri's critique of architectural ideology into design. A fundamental premise of No Stop City and other Archi Zoom projects was the critique of utopian architecture and its blind faith toward the improvement of the city through technological development. Like Tafuri, Archi Zoom understood the city and its spatial organization as a direct consequence of capital's organization of the labor force. Both Tafuri's and Archi Zoom's critiques were influenced by Operaismo, a political movement that in the 1960s introduced a radical Marxist critique of the traditional working class movements within welfare state capitalism. In light of Operaismo's anti-reformism and anti-utopianism, Archi Zoom proposed not to change the existing reality of the city, but to exaggerate it ad absurdum in order to study its political consequences. Following Frederick Engels' observation that there is not a city for the working class, but only a class critique of the existing city, Arkizun proposed one of the most lucid and radical critiques of the way architecture and urbanism have developed as ideological forms that conceal the true nature of the capitalist city. In order to fully grasp the radicality of this critique, we first have to analyse the premises of Arkizun's work. The members of Arkizun, Andrea Branzi, Gilberto Coretti, Paolo Deganello, and Massimo Marozzi, met at the University of Florence in the early 1960s as students in the architecture department. From their very first project, La Città Estrusa, the Extruded City of 1964, their work showed strong political connotations. In this work, the future Arkizun members put forward a proposal for the Piana di Firenze, a vast urban region between Florence and Prato that at the time was undergoing an intense process of urbanisation. In their proposal, they depicted the region as one coherent architectural system that would literally extrude and unite all the productive and social functions of the region as one gigantic factory. As Coretti wrote, quote, "The concept of La Città Estrusa is very banal. It comes from the idea that of the city as transmission belt linking the whole urban agglomeration between Prato and Florence. This transmission belt contains all the industrial equipment necessary for production and administration. It can also contain housing. La Città Estrusa is the very extrusion of all the urban elements that form the productive apparatus of the region. The project of La Città Estrusa can be interpreted as an attempt to follow Mario Tronti's earlier and influential essay, quote, La Fabbrica e la Società, The Factory and Society, published in 1962 in the second issue of Quaderni Rossi. Together with Raniero Panzieri, Tronti was a key figure in the Operaismo movement, which realised that what was happening in Italy in the 1960s had already happened in the United States in the 1930s. That is, the relationship between industrial production and consumption within a vast organic and biopolitical apparatus that mobilised the entire spectrum of social relationships was strengthening rapidly. Production was no longer confined to the factory, but was extended to all urban activities, leisure, education, consumption, and housing. In La Fabbrica e la Società, Tronti noted that in an advanced capitalist phase, the factory is no longer the exclusive place of work. The whole society becomes a factory. Facing such a scenario, Tronti rejected the utopian and reformist aspirations of the progressive left to, quote, rationally improve the conditions of the working class. For Tronti, it was precisely these reformist aspirations, much more than capital itself, that debased working class struggles. Tronti derived his position from an understanding of how the incessant development of capital as it leaps forward in terms of political and technological organisation is not a development per se. According to Tronti, capital was forced to constantly develop itself in order to counter and resist working class struggle. Seen from the point of view of the workers' struggle, capitalist development was the measure of the working class strength to rebel against capital. From the point of view of capital, the struggle of the working class was the vital trigger for development. Following Vladimir Lenin, Tronti declared to search for the salvation of the working class outside of capitalism was a reactionary idea, given that the further development of capital would allow workers the possibility to organise themselves and claim power over the means of production. What was needed was not a critique of capital, but a radical critique of the ideological role played by the traditional working class movements in resisting capital's further development. Archizum's formation in 1966 was both an emulation and a parody of the British group Archigram. Like Archigram, Archizum's beginnings were deeply influenced both by the emergence of pop art and technological developments. While the former understood technology and consumerist culture as innocent means of social emancipation, for the latter, pop offered the artistic means for a realist and thus extreme representation of a society finally liberated from the austere ethos of the post-war years and deeply intolerant toward the ethics of work. In their early projects, such as the designs they presented with Super Studio in their very first exhibition in 1966 in Pistoia, entitled Super Architectura, Archizum embraced the aesthetic of consumerist culture as a radical critique of welfare state capitalism. A fundamental consequence of the advent of the welfare state was the phenomenon of mass consumerism. While pre-welfare state capitalism was focused on production and profit, welfare state capitalism linked production to workers' consumption within an overall economic plan organically. The logic of the welfare state was to increase consumption in order to increase productivity, but also to maintain a balance between production and consumption within the overall goal of making workers work. In this sense, its tacit goal, especially in Italy, was to achieve a tempered consumerism in which consumption was deployed to tighten the relationship between work and the labour force. At the same time, the abrupt economic development that made Italy an industrial country in just a few years produced a new subjectivity that was far from tempered. The operasti called this emerging subjectivity a rude rasa pagana, pagan race. Far from the skilled industrial worker and the small-scale artisan, the rude ragazza pagana was celebrated by the operasti, who took the mass worker as their subject. Mass workers had no personal attachment to work, their only interest being in wage. For the operasti, such a cynical and opportunistic attitude toward work was potentially much more revolutionary than the Italian Communist Party's tendency to instill a sense of pride in work. It was for this reason that a fundamental political slogan of the mass worker embraced by the operasti was più soldi e meno lavoro, more money and less work. It meant less productivity and more enjoyment of life, to the point in which life would be increasingly detached from the necessity of work. The operasti defined this detachment as the, quote, refusal of work. Not a strike, but the abolition of work as a necessity of living. The goal was to make the worker's income independent from a wage determined according to capitalism's need to produce profit. Within this theoretical framework, uncontrolled hedonism, even in the brutal and alienated form of mass consumption, was interpreted by the operasti as a potential social force that could open the gap between income and profit, and thus between workers and capital. It is precisely within this framework that we should read Archizum's design objects, such as the Safari Sofa of 68, and the Dream Beds of 66 to 67. A characteristic of these design projects was their ostensible bad taste, articulated in the form of pseudo-monumental forms dressed with the most vulgar emblems of pop culture. With these objects, Archizum embraced and celebrated the crass vulgarity of the new rude ragazza pagana and its uncontrolled consumerism, aiming to violently collapse the concept of, quote, good design, introduced in Italy by Scandinavian modernism, whose sobriety and functionality embodied the spirit of welfare capitalism. Think IKEA. And yet, very soon, Akizum realised that their pop references were a potential dead end for their critique. The risk of playing with the visible emblems of mass culture soon appeared to them as an easy commentary that failed to analyse deeper structural ways in which welfare capitalism was changing the city. A fundamental episode that changed Akizum's approach to design and convinced them to drastically reduce their architectural forms to a very simplified vocabulary was their encounter with the work of Aldo Rossi. What fascinated them was Rossi's dry, pared-back monumental architectural language. For Akizum, this language suggested the arrival of a venticello crudele, cruel wind, that could sweep away the euphoria of mass consumerism. A project that signalled a change of direction in Akizum's work toward a more reduced architectural language was their competition entry for a National Centre for Arts and Crafts in the Fortezza di Basso in Florence of 1968. In their scheme, Akizum proposed to fill the 16th century fortress with a radically abstract sculpture, reminiscent of the industrial architecture of the factory. In contradistinction to their early pop imagery, Akizum eliminated architectural gesture in favour of an overall neutral structure, a sort of industrial scaffolding that would reveal the generic condition of work and production. Their proposal introduced a theme that was of fundamental importance to their subsequent work. Space freed from walls and perimeters, artificially lit and climatically controlled. For Akizum, such minimal architecture responded to the logic of work itself, which in its most organized form is no longer made of specific activities, but rather of what Marx called labor sans phrase. In the introduction to the Grandis, a text referenced often by the operasti, Marx noted that abstraction is not only a methodology for reading political economy, but also the ethos of a society driven by the most developed form of capital, in which individuals can easily move from one job to another and become indifferent toward their work. For Akizum, indifference was precisely the attribute of the capitalistic city that the Fortezza di Basso intervention was supposed to exemplify. They noted that modern architecture, with its bare and mute forms, was the outcome of the primary role of production over the other realities of the city. A canonical example of this was Mies van der Rohe's buildings, especially those designed when he lived in the United States, during which the German architect reduced architecture to ready-made industrial components. Greatly admired by the members of Akizum, Mies's architecture represented, as Tafuri noted in Architecture and Utopia, the moment in which industrially produced architecture was no longer just the architecture of the factory, but that of the entire city. Since the 1920s, architects including Ludwig Hilbersheimer had already been theorizing the city as fixed capital as an integral part of production processes. Hilbersheimer's projects for the Großstadt, with their emphasis on the generic character of urban space, postulated a city made no longer of single architectural inventions, but rather of an overall economic process in which the two most important elements were the definition of the whole system and the single cell. What disappeared in this theory of the city was a concern for architecture as building. Precisely for this reason, according to Tafuri, Hilbersheimer was the only architect that had understood the true terms of the capitalist city. Instead of investing in the redeeming potential of architecture, Hilbersema focused on the overall structural formation of the capitalist city and on its production cycle, in which architecture as, quote, representation, as form, was completely eliminated. It was precisely by re-elaborating Hilbersema's approach in light of Tafuri's critique of architectural ideology that in 1969, ArchiZoom conceived their most important project, No Stop City, a plan for the total urbanization of the world. No Stop City was first published in Casabella in June 1970 with the title Città Catena di Montaggio di Fatti Sociali, City Assembly Line of Social Issues. It was developed for an exhibition in Rotterdam that ended up never taking place. The basic idea was to reduce the city to its most important infrastructural equipment. An early drawing made with a typewriter shows No Stop City as a simple distribution of lifts and structural columns organized in a grid. ArchiZoom defined this type of architecture as non-figurative, meaning freed from all kinds of architectural forms and thus reduced to its most basic function, the reproduction of labor force. No Stop City was developed in competition with and in emulation of Super Studio's Continuous Monument, which the Florentine group presented in 1969 at a competition organized in the context of the Graz Trigon. Super Studio proposed a monumental viaduct that would gradually absorb the entire urbanized world, a fundamental characteristic of Continuous Monument. Was its extreme formal reduction, in which the industrial forms of 1960s architecture, such as the curtain wall, were mixed with references to ancient monuments, such as the Great Wall of China. In contrast to Super Studio's Continuous Monument, in which everything was reduced to a single architectural gesture, ArchiZoom developed a city without architecture. In No Stop City, the city was presented as devoid of any representation or meaning and made of the most basic and generic infrastructural support, exaggerated to the point where it would gradually cover the world's entire surface. Like the Fortezza d'Abasso project, No Stop City was imagined as an extreme development of building technologies such as those at work in the factory and in the shopping mall, deep spaces, minimum structure, and climatic control. ArchiZoom observed that in these buildings, capital was less ideological than in housing. With housing, capital attempted to form the moral values of the good citizen, whereas within the factory and the supermarket, the reality of capital addressed the most basic conditions of the human species, those of mere production and mere consumption. Another crucial political motivation behind No Stop City was to counter the logic of social housing, which behind the benevolent and paternalistic face of social assistance always implied a regime of calculated scarcity of inhabitable space in order not to inflate the housing market. By expanding the inhabitable space toward infinite reproduction, No Stop City put forward a scenario in which the house as commodity would no longer exist. This embodied the strategy of the operaisti to make wage an independent variable from profit. If capitalists had always used the wage system in order to capture the surplus value of work and thus make profit, it was precisely by pushing workers' demands beyond the wage limits, beyond the, quote, fair compensation of their work, that would collapse capitalist domination. ArchiZoom noted that within the welfare logic, the house was a fundamental asset of the wage system. Housing was only granted to those who work and produce. Accordingly, they proposed a strategy of sheer quantity to counter the regime of calculated scarcity imposed by capital. The political battle of workers against capital would no longer be a matter of values, of ideologies, of representations, but merely a battle, but a battle of mere quantity. If capital demanded more production for less compensation, workers demanded more compensation for less work. Just as Tar Fury made clear that in his framing of the battle against capital, there was no space for utopia, No Stop City proposed an exaggeration of what the modern city had already accomplished, the integration of all aspects of life within the productive reality. The difference was that in No Stop City, this reality was rendered so explicit that it would introduce a new level of critical consciousness, an understanding of the city beyond all the representations, allegories, narratives, and decorations that capital had produced in order to mystify its real objectives. The 1970 competition for a new University of Florence campus supplied the occasion for a concrete application of the principles of No Stop City. The program of the competition asked for the design of a vast university campus in the area between Florence and Prato, the same site of the La Città Estruzza. The brief presented by the university proposed that the space be a vast and articulated nexus for the different residential and productive centres that already existed in the area. The competition program thus suggested a scenario that confirmed the fundamental hypotheses of No Stop City, the evolution of the city toward a more integrated condition in which not only material production, but also housing and education form a unified system devoid of any boundaries. Archizum's proposal consisted of a grid measuring 125 by 125 metres that organised the available flat territory. The grid would be increasingly filled with programmes contained within buildings. Designed as generic boxes with no external openings, these buildings were imagined as vast containers to accommodate any sort of activity. The aim was to propose a scheme that would be as anonymous as possible. In the face of capital's ultimate integration with the city, there was no more room for formal invention or stylistic diversity. For Archizum, the competition encouraged a useless parade of, quote, different interpretations of the brief, in which the only job left to the architect was to decorate something he or she could not even understand in its spatial and political logic. For this reason, Archizum decided to break the rule of anonymity for the competition and signed their entry, ironically calling their proposal I progetti si firmano, projects must be signed. If anonymity in competitions pushes the participants to radicalise their personal style in order to be more easily recognisable, Archizum signed their entry in order to be as anonymous as possible. The intense politicisation of Archizum's work was both its strength, but also what led to the group's premature end. There is no doubt that the sweeping critique advanced by their projects could not last longer than a few years if it were to maintain its corrosive quality. Seen as a whole, Archizum's work was an aggressive pamphlet against architecture as the embodiment of values responsible for not providing the working class with the possibility of realising their power over the city. Ironically, the major blow to their work came from Tar Fury himself. In Architecture and Utopia, Tar Fury accused Florentine groups such as Archizum and Superstudio of proposing a tired remake of avant-garde games. Tar Fury's hostility would leave a heavy mark on the work of both groups, which, particularly in Italy, would be nearly ignored in accounts of Italian architecture, only to be acknowledged beginning in the late 1990s. However, in many readings of Archizum's work, the politics behind it has often been banalised as mere avant-garde provocation and architectural experimentation. Equally problematic is that their work has been claimed as a sort of forerunner of more recent academic trends such as, quote, weak urbanism, landscape urbanism, and ecological urbanism. Even if these affiliations seem to be approved by the group's members, there remains a large gap between Arkizum's political radicalism and certain theories that seem to be mere ideological celebrations of the ethos of the contemporary neoliberal city. Faced with these problematic readings of Arkizum's work, it is important to remember that their work was contingent upon its time, and no actualization of their work in a contemporary context is possible without distorting its original meaning. Arkizum's work remains relevant in its lesson that architecture is not only the art of building, in which the duty of the profession is to accomplish a given task, but is also a tool to critique this task without trying to solve it. Criticism does not automatically come with solutions, but can sometimes trigger other solutions that lie outside of what is professionally conceivable by architecture. It is precisely by focusing on beyond what is professionally conceivable that architecture finds its proper space of thinking and questioning the spaces in which we live. Okay, so I had no idea that their kind of ugly furniture was an attempt to counter the good taste Scandinavian modernism of the welfare state, and I'm somehow associating it with Frank Agozzo, or even it's weird because I guess the Venturis would say that Venturi Scott Brown would somehow look to that exact same bad taste, but for architectural rather than political reasons, I think. Anyway, this pagan race is a pretty interesting subject.